seems to me that there's an extra lot of Maya coming out of Washington, D.C. lately, so you're probably very glad to be in Iowa right now.
Yes.
This evening is the first of five sessions we're going to be having this weekend on the topic of gems from the Upanishads. There will be different locations and times for these sessions. Two more will be tomorrow, one in the morning, one in the evening. And again on Sunday, one in the morning, one in the evening. More information about the locations and the times and directions for how to get to those locations can be found on our website. It's VedantaIowa.org, and there's something you can click on right there on the front page that gives directions to all of the venues. Welcome back, Maharaj. We're very happy to have you back in Iowa.
Happy to be here.
Tirthankar, I think, has a logistical announcement, yes?
All right. We'll be actually distributing the study material that Maharaj has already sent. So we made some copies, and we'll be distributing it to you. And we'll be collecting actually $5, just a nominal fee for, you know, printing and copying this stuff. So those now we'll distribute. And we'll have some pen also along with that to take notes. You can
If I stand here, people cannot see. So can we turn it a little bit this way?
We'll be collecting the money later before you leave today. So don't worry about going later.
You're sending these around?
Oh, yeah. I'm just keeping two for here.
Let's start with the Shanti Mantra from the Upanishads. Shanti Mantra means a prayer seeking peace for all beings in this universe, including animals, plants, and things. There are many Shanti Mantras. Each Upanishad has at least one Shanti Mantra. This is from one of the Upanishads. Om Bhadram Karne Bhishrunuyama Deva Bhadram Pashye Maksha Bhiryajatra Sthirairangaye Stushtuvagam Sastano Bhihi Vyashema Devahitayadayuhu Swastina Indra Vriddhashravah Swastina Pusha Vishvavedah Swastina Starkshyo Arishtanemihi Swastina Brihaspatir Dadhatu Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. May we hear only auspicious sounds with our ears, with our eyes. May we see only auspicious sights. With all our sense organs of perception, jnanendriyas, may we perceive the auspicious presence of the Divine Lord in all forms, and with all our sense organs of action, or karmendriyas, may we perform all our actions as worship of the Divine. With a strong body, with fit sense organs and a pure mind, may we spend the rest of this life granted to us by the Lord in such a way that all our actions can be offered as our humble worship of the Divine. May the blessings of the Lord in all His forms be upon us all always. Om peace. May there be peace and joy in our hearts. May there be peace and harmony amongst all beings. And may there be peace everywhere in nature. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti is always mentioned 3 times because our ancient sages thought deeply about all aspects of human life, including the topic of suffering. Suffering is common experience. So everybody wants to know more about suffering, why it comes and how to prevent it. So the rishis came to the conclusion that suffering comes from 3 sources. Most of the suffering comes from our own self. Adhyatmika tapa. Tapa means heat, heat or suffering. Adhyatmika tapa means problems, suffering caused by ourselves, oneself. Something wrong I did, and I'm experiencing the evil result, the painful result of my bad action. That is adhyatmika tapa. The first shanti is for that. May I be always harmonious and peaceful within myself, so that I don't create any trouble for myself or for others. It's called adhyatmika shanti. So first shanti is for adhyatmika shanti, peace within. Then sometimes it appears that some difficulty seems to come from outside sources, other people, animals and plants. Other people may sometimes create trouble and we don't know why they are creating this trouble, we blame them. So that is adi bhautika tapa. Animals also create trouble for us. In rural areas, wild animals come and create difficulty. They kill people, they lift cattle. So we don't want that kind of suffering, which is called adi bhautika tapa. Tapa means heat or suffering coming from other beings. So second shanti is for that. May there be peace among all the beings. May there be harmony. Then still there is another kind of suffering that comes to human beings, and that comes from nature. Due to natural calamities such as lightning, too much rain, too little rain, volcanic eruption, earthquake, hurricane, this also causes a lot of suffering to human beings. Nobody causes them, it happens in nature. That is called adhi daivika tapa, due to supernatural causes. So the third shanti is for peace in nature. If the whole nature is peaceful, then we do not anticipate difficulty from nature. So the third shanti is for adhi daivika shanti. Adhyatmika shanti, peace within me. Adi bhautika shanti, peace and harmony amongst all the beings. And adi daivika shanti, peace in nature. So always we should say Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. All shanti mantras end with this prayer. Peace for me, peace for everybody here, peace for everybody everywhere, and peace for all the beings in the whole of creation. So that is the shanti mantra. Some shanti mantra has to be chanted before we begin any activity, worship or study or any work. In your office work also, you can chant for yourself. Don't create disturbance in the office by chanting it loudly. Other people may or may not understand. It's for your own well-being and for the well-being of all others. Shanti mantra has to be chanted. So that we have done. Now, a few words about, by way of general introduction, to the topic of Upanishads. In your earlier retreats, have you studied Upanishads?
No.
You have been studying Gita chapters.
In Cedar Rapids, no.
Okay, that's good. But we will make a beginning of the topic of Upanishads, so we'll see how much we can accomplish. First of all, what is the meaning of the word Upanishad? That we have to understand. There are a couple of different interpretations of the word Upanishad. Instead of wasting this whole page, give me one. I will use this space. The space is precious. I will write in Nagri and I will write in English also. Upanishad. Now this is made up of three parts. This word is made up of three parts. Upa. Ni shad. The meaning that I like of this word is the one given by Shankaracharya in his introduction to the Upanishads. Upa means near, close. This represents closeness as opposed to a course that you take online. You don't have to go to any classroom. There are whole programs like that. You can do your MBA degree by taking online courses. That is, there is no closeness there. It becomes impersonal way of learning. This is close. Sometimes even closer, only three or four people are there. Upanishad class, many people don't come. It's not. You don't expect huge crowds of people to come for Upanishad lectures. This is optimum. Even fewer will be good. Upa means... but everybody in Iowa is fully qualified. Upa, ni means certain, with certainty. There is no element of doubt in this. Upa, ni means certainty, with certainty. Shad means to remove, to become free from something, to remove. Can everybody see this one, what I am writing? Most of you can see. Upanishad. Three words are there. If you combine them all together, the meaning is knowledge gained by close contact with the teacher, knowledge which will certainly, without any trace or doubt, remove ignorance. The whole meaning of the word Upanishad means that knowledge which is gained by qualified students from a qualified teacher removes completely and with certainty ignorance. What kind of ignorance? Ignorance of our true divine nature. Since you have been studying various chapters of the Gita, which chapter are you doing now?
We will be doing 13 next.
So 13 chapter is the most important chapter. 13 chapter of the Gita. Since you are going to study 13 chapter, I will recommend that you pay special attention to some verses there. 13 chapter, verse number 2. These are my favorite verses. you may find other things more interesting. 13 chapter 26, 13 chapter 27. There may be a few others, but for the time being, I'm bringing to your attention these three verses. We are discussing the topic of what kind of ignorance that Upanishad remove. In these three verses and in many other places in the Gita, the Lord Sri Krishna says that the same divinity is present in all the beings without exception. The same divine is present. In this chapter it says, in this verse it says, Yavat sanjayate kinchit sattvam sthavara jangamam kshetra kshetra jnasam yogat tadvidhi bharatashyabha. Any being is there without exception, moving or unmoving, sthavara jangamam, whatever thing is there in the whole of creation is made up of a combination of two things. That is, samyoga means combination. Two, we are not, if you take any human personality, we are not one homogeneous thing. We are a complex of many different things put together that you can understand without much difficulty. If you take the human personality, it is a complex entity. We have a body, body has so many parts, and we have a mind, mind has so many parts, and that does not, body mind does not exhaust our personality, there are many things. So it's a complex. This complex of two major events, kshetra, kshetrajna, samyoga. The chapter is called what? Kshetra. Whenever you study, it's the key to knowledge, self-knowledge. So we don't know that one. We assume it's obvious, that is all there is to it. That's our misapprehension. What is the most obvious part of my personality? My body. Because sometimes I have a headache, sometimes I have a stomach ache, sometimes I feel comfortable, sometimes I feel some body problem, leg pain or hand pain or stomach ache or something will come. So then I'm aware of my body. My body is the most visible, most obvious part of my personality, and most of the time I am only aware of my body. I am also aware of my mind. My body is not all there is to my personality. It does not exhaust my personality. It's my mind also. I don't see the mind. It is subtle. But I know there is a mind. I hope I have a mind. So that also does not exhaust the personality. There is some, a divine element is present. We are not aware of that most of the time. Most of the time, most of us are aware of only body and the mind. But in this chapter, Sri Krishna says that is not all there is to it. There is a divine element. Kshetrajna means the Lord Himself. Kshetrajnam chapi mam vidhi sarva kshetreshu bharata. Pay special attention to this particular verse, second line. You will study that when you come to that. So that we are ignorant of that. I'm knowledgeable about my body. Lot of medical information in the medical sciences making rapid progress. We know how the body works, what it, anatomy, physiology, all those things we know. And more knowledge is being generated. More and more remedies are being found for body problems. That we are very much aware of. That. I am aware of my mind. Psychology deals with the mind. The functioning of the mind, its aberrations, its treatment, everything. That is all I am aware of. But what divine element? What divine element? A God within me? I don't see any God within me. I only see my physical body. So we are unaware most of the time of the divinity present within us. How do we know there is a divinity present within us? This is Shastra. The scripture says, that's all I know. All I have is information gained from the scriptures. Scripture says God is present within you. There is another verse which you can make a note. 18 chapter 61. It's all from BG. BG means?
Yeah.
Bhagavad Gita. When you get to that chapter, you can pay special attention to these. Yes, here Sri Krishna says, Ishvaraha sarva bhutanam hriddeshe arjuna tishtati. O Arjuna, sarva bhutanam hriddeshe, in the hearts of all the beings, Ishvaraha tishtati, the Lord is present. He says that. But how do I know? Because only it is printed in the book. Because Krishna is supposed to have said. Do I know it by experience, Ishvara, have I seen? No. So that is my ignorance. Upanishad removes that ignorance completely, certainty, once for all. There is no element of doubt left. Once I gather, grasp the Upanishads, the presence of the Divine within me should become, will become my experience which nobody can dispute. No trace of doubt in my mind about the truth. If I have experience of something, then there is no doubt about it. If I have only heard about something, there is doubt about it. But if I have experienced it, then there is no question. So, Upanishad helps us to experience the divinity present within us. And that experience is indisputable and cannot be doubted. That is the meaning of the word Upanishad. Any question about the meaning of the word Upanishad so far? Can we proceed further?
You said the certainty, is it in Sanskrit, is it the Nishchit?
Nishchayena.
Nishchayena.
Ni means Nishchayena, with certainty. No, maybe, if, but, no, not conditional. Without any element of trace of doubt, you will experience the divinity present within you. How will you gain that experience? Upanishad will help you to gain that experience. That's why it is important to study Upanishads. Upanishad, knowledge gained from a teacher in close proximity. What? Who can be a teacher and who can be a student? These are all things to study in the Upanishad. Qualifications of a teacher are given in the Mundaka Upanishad. Qualifications of a student are given in other Upanishads. So we have to, all those conditions must be met. If any two people sit down together and study Upanishad, may not produce that knowledge. But both the students and the teacher must have the prescribed qualification. Those are detailed information, we'll go to it if you can get. But this is the meaning of the Upanishad. Okay? Now, you have heard of the word Vedas. Veda. Veda means what? Veda means?
Knowledge.
Or the books containing that knowledge. Generally, knowledge is the meaning of the word Veda. If you refer to the books, knowledge of everything. If you refer to the books, how many Vedas are you?
Four
Vedas. What are they? Rig Veda, second one is Yajur Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda. This is a long not Sama Veda, Sama Veda in Sanskrit, short vowels and long vowels, you have to distinguish, otherwise the meaning will be different. Sama Veda. Fourth one is Atharva Veda. I don't know the Vedas, I don't know the names only. So what I know, I am telling you. Atharva Veda. Now, each Veda has generally four main divisions. The Vedas are not one single book, they are a composite of many different parts, compilations. Over a period of a long time, they accumulated and became the Vedas. Now let us go to the parts of the Vedas. That's where we get the word Upanishad. I can write here.
Next page will be better.
You won't be able to see.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I'll write. I'm a miser when it comes to paper. Parts of the Vedas. Each Veda has generally four parts. First part. What is it called?
Samhita.
Samhita means that portion of the Vedas which contains hymns, stotras, hymns to various deities, hymns to Surya, to Agni, to Yama, to Varuna, to Indra, to Brihaspati, all these deities which the Vedas were worshipping, so many hymns, mostly hymns. So that part which contains hymns is called Samhita part of the Vedas. What is the second part? Brahmana. This is a confusing term. There are two ends in Sanskrit, most Indian languages. Brahmana, with a dot underneath. Brahmana is not the caste Brahmana. Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, not that Brahmana. Word is the same, but meaning is different. Brahmana means description of rituals, Vedic rituals. This part of the Vedas contain description of Vedic rituals. That is not the focus of our study. We will simply notice them and leave it. What is the third part called? Aranyaka, long A. Aranyaka contains mystical passages for meditation. Aranya means what?
Forest.
So these people used to retire to the forest in the advanced later stages of their life after fulfilling the obligations of householder's life. Grihastashrama, four ashramas, right? Mm-hmm. What is the first ashrama?
Brahmacharya
ashrama. Then? Grihastashrama. Then? In Vanaprastha ashrama, they were studying the Aranyakas and meditating on the meaning of the rituals, the deeper mystic meanings of the rituals. We don't study them also, although Brihadaranyaka Upanishad comes from the Aranyaka portion of the Vedas. What is the fourth part of the Vedas?
Upanishads,
that is the knowledge part. This is what we are trying to understand now. Upanishads. Rituals, these are hymns, rituals, mystical interpretation of rituals for meditation, and this is knowledge of the self, Atma Jnana. Our Swamiji is known as Atma Jnanananda. He came here once, remember?
Yes.
So Atma Jnana means self-knowledge. Atma means my divine self within me. The body is also part of me, but the body is a kind of superficial, temporary thing. It comes and goes, it is born, it becomes old, it dies, and another body is born. So that body is part of me, but there is a stable, lasting, infinite part of me which does not take birth or die. You studied that one in the Gita. Where did you study that one? What is the description of the Atman? Many places. So one place where, if you remember, Anybody remembers? Najayate mriyate va kada chinnayam bhutva bhavita va na bhuyah ajo nitya shashvata ayam puranah nahanyate hanyamane sharire. Sharire hanyamane, when the body dies, atma nahanyate, the self does not die. It is ajaha, worthless, nitya, eternal, shashvata, permanent, and so on. Endless. Najayate namriyate, does not take but does not take. That is, that knowledge of that is what the Upanishads contain. Not knowledge of the body. You don't, if you want to study anatomy, you don't go to the Upanishad. Just of knowledge. We'll take care of that kind of knowledge. But if you want to know what is the divine element present with you, what's my true nature? What's my true nature? This body is only a temporary vestige in which the Atman seems to be. But the Atman is my true nature. That is what Upanishad says. There's a Mahavakya, it says, Aham Brahmasmi. We'll get to that later during this weekend. Tattvamasi, that thou art. That immortal, imperishable, immaterial. Immaterial means not inconsequential. Immaterial means not material in nature. It is spiritual in nature. It is consciousness. That's what you truly are. Tattvamasi, that thou art, Upanishad says. So Upanishad is that part of the Vedas which conveys our true, divine, immortal nature, that knowledge it has. It's also called Jnana Kanda. This is called Karma Kanda, ritualistic portion, knowledge portion. So, where does Upanishad fit in the Vedas? You know now. Upanishad means the later part of the Vedas which contains self-knowledge. Self, not knowledge. Later, because it sort of evolution took place. It started with rituals. Self-knowledge. I remember suddenly this thought came, I don't know why it came. I said I was a miser when it comes to paper. What happened was, when I was in primary school, fourth grade, we had a final exam. And the teacher had, this story has nothing to do with the Upanishad. But when I'm writing, how much space is going away, that's my feeling. So the teacher had said, bring your pencil, not pen, no, you're not allowed to take ink pens, pencil and one sheet of paper. That was the instruction to go to the exam. So I took one sheet of paper and my mother gave me a pencil. I took it to the exam. The teacher gave some dictation, something to write and some spelling, this and that. We wrote all of that. I wrote my name and gave it to the teacher. And all of that took only one side of the paper. The other side remained blank. I was feeling, that blank paper also I have to give back to the teacher. So I went home back. My mother asked, did you write? Yes, I wrote. But I said, Mother, I could not bring the other side back. Which other side? The exam took only one side and had to give the blank side also to the teacher. That's how I am concerned about conservation of it. It's an obsession with me. So I am just thinking about this space. I will use it somehow. So, self-knowledge. Atma jnana. Atma means the divine self within us. Atma jnana, that is what Upanishads contain. Okay, then we will just leave. Oh, yes.
Are there many divisions
in all the Vedas. So some portion of the Vedas are called Upanishads, so we are studying that. No, we are not studying this, the first three portions. Every Veda has generally all these four. Okay, introduction to Upanishad. What Upanishad means, you know, what it contains, you know. Now, what I have done in this material you have, I have collected 43 passages, right? Oh,
44,
actually only 43, but one passage is repeated. By mistake, I repeated one passage. Anyhow, let us skip the first four passages for later study. I should have put them on the end. The first four passages are called Mahavakyas. Mahavakya means, Mahavakya means what literally? Mahan means great. Vakya means sentence. Each of these four Mahavakyas, first four passages, Aham Brahmasmi, Ayamatma Brahma, Tattvamasi, Prajnanam Brahma, those four, each one of them is called a Mahavakya. Mahavakya means a great sentence. Why is it called Mahavakya? This, of all the Upanishadic literature, there are so many Upanishads, 10 or 12 major Upanishads, and sometimes more than 100 Upanishads are there, so some of them are minor Upanishads. Out of all those Upanishads, only four short sentences have been taken and they are highlighted, showcased as containing the essence of all Upanishadic knowledge. Even any one of them is enough, all the four need not be. Any one of them contains the essence of whole Upanishadic knowledge, Atma-jnana it gives, if you study properly, understand it. Mahavakya. The Mahavakyas are very succinct utterances. Sometimes only two or three words are there. Three words are there. Aham Brahma Asmi, Tat Tvam Asi, Ayam Atma Brahma. Prajnanam Brahma is only two words. Prajnanam Brahma. Very short sentence. So they need some explanation or commentary to understand the proper, deeper meaning of the Mahavakya. So we will come to that a little bit later in this study. We will take simpler passages first. So I would request you to go to page 3, passage number 5. Now before we do that, I remember one more thing. What is the major content of the Upanishad? As already we saw, Atma-jnana. Atma-jnana can be, two aspects of it can be seen. Some more general introduction about Upanishad before you go to the specific passages. Two specific aspects of Atma-jnana are, in all of the Upanishadic literature, the sages, Vedic rishis, on the basis of their direct experience, this is not theoretical knowledge. Supposing I study history, American history, what kind of knowledge is that? When Civil War took place, I was not there, I am reading about it a couple of centuries later. American War of Independence and the Civil War and the abolition of slavery and all recent history, all these things, if I read in books, what kind of knowledge do I get? Indirect knowledge. Supposing I have toothache, what kind of knowledge is that? Direct knowledge. I don't have to read in a book, oh, you have toothache now. Not like that. Before, without the need for telling you, have to, dentist doesn't have to tell me you have toothache. I know, I tell the dentist, I have toothache. I am the first person to experience it directly without the help of any book or any other agent or teacher. Direct personal experience. The rishis had that kind of experience about the self, their immortal divine nature, God present within them, they experience the presence of God. They didn't read about God is present within me. That is our kind of knowledge. I'm reading the Upanishads. Upanishad says God is present within me. Gita says Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hridayesha Adhyatmeshu. That's my theoretical second hand knowledge. But the rishis had direct personal experience of the presence of divinity within them. So the Upanishadic knowledge is based on direct experience. Based on direct experience of the rishis. And what is the purpose of our studying the Upanishads? Purpose is we also have to gain the experience. Should not be satisfied reading Upanishad. If you memorize all the passages and interpretations and stop with that, that is not true knowledge according to Upanishad. Experience alone is the true knowledge. It is just like tasting something. Let us say mango ice cream. Mango ice cream? I'm not fond of mango ice cream. Don't bring mango ice cream. In some place I mention it, next day four people cry. I don't like mango ice cream. I'm just giving it as an example because many people have know the taste of strawberry, vanilla, chocolate ice cream. Common thing. But mango ice cream is not as common. So if there is somebody who has not tasted mango ice cream, and I have tasted mango ice cream, if he asks me how does mango taste, or mango fruit, how does it taste, he has not tasted mango fruit. How can I explain the taste of mango fruit? You know, I can say mango is sweet. He thinks sweet means, is it sweet like sugar? No, 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 not like sugar. Is it sweet like apple? No, not quite like apple. Is it sweet like pears? Not like sugar. How sweet means what? Sweet means sweet like mango. There is no other thing just like mango. Mango itself has to be tasted. How do we know the taste of mango? Only by experience. Reading about mango taste in a book or watching a video about other people eating mango does not give us any idea of the taste of mango. Only you have to experience it. Atma jnana is like that. Self-knowledge is not knowledge gained by reading Upanishad. By reading Upanishad, you won't get self-knowledge. You have to do sadhana. Upanishad gives the foundation. By hearing about a lecture about retreat, attending retreat on Upanishad, you won't get self-knowledge. You have to gain it your own experience. So Upanishad contains information based experience of the sages. What is the purpose? We have to gain that experience ourselves. We should not remain satisfied with reading Upanishad. We should not say, I read Upanishad, I have got Atma Jnana. That will be wrong. I have to gain Anubhavaika Vedyam. There is a phrase in Sanskrit. It's called Anubhavaika Vedyam. Only by Anubhava means experience. Not theoretical knowledge. Second aspect of self-knowledge is all the Upanishads talk about one ultimate reality, which is called what? Brahman or Atman. The terminology in Vedanta is not standardized. Unlike the terminology in science, engineering, there are professional societies and standardization bodies which have committees which make standard terminology. You can't use any term. You have to use the same term in physics or chemistry or engineering or any branch of science and technology. But in Vedanta, such a term as standardization does not exist. Every sage uses his own words. So Brahman or Atman, different aspects of it. So they speak about one ultimate reality called Brahman, all the Upanishads. That's the theme. The theme of all the Upanishads, based on experience, and they talk about one ultimate reality called Brahman. And the third thing that all the Upanishads talk is that Brahman alone is present in all and everything. In Chandogya Upanishad, probably will come to, there is a sentence which says, Sarvam khalu idam brahma. Idam means this whole visible universe, whatever we are seeing, the whole cosmos. Sarvam idam, the whole universe, is nothing but Brahman. Appearing in this way with names and forms and qualities, when viewed with, by the mind with the sense organs.
So, Sarvam Kalidam Brahman is not a Mahavakya?
No, it's not written. Though it has same status and power as a Mahavakya, it is not, for some reason, it's not one of the four Mahavakyas.
Oh.
It's just as important.
Yeah. Maharaj, Sarvam Kalidam Brahman, is it only limited to the universe or is it beyond? Like, is it the
Brahman exceeds the universe. Universe does not exhaust Brahman. The visible universe itself, as vast as it is, does not exhaust Brahman. Atyatishta dashangulam, it transcends the universe. Okay. Now the third thing that Upanishad, the main refrain in the Upanishads, is that everything that we can think of is nothing but Brahman. All is Brahman. Sarvam kalavidam Brahma. Including inanimate objects, abstract things, moving things, unmoving things, individuals, all individuals. I am Atma, Brahma is one of the Mahavakyas, comes in Mandukya Upanishad. Each individual soul, Atma, is nothing but Brahma, appears to be separated and limited. Avibhaktam cha bhuteshu vibhaktamiva cha sthitam, you see in the Gita. So these are the general topics you come across in the Upanishads. Now, we go back to what we are talking about. History. What kind of knowledge is that? Indirect. Second-hand knowledge. How do I study history? I read about reading or hearing. Somebody, history professor, comes and gives a lecture on history. This happened, Indian history, American history, like that. That is second-hand knowledge, theoretical knowledge. How do I gain that one? I concentrate, I carefully listen to what the professor is saying in the history class. I make notes, I read books on history, textbooks I read. So using my mind as the principal instrument of knowledge is mental knowledge. Where does the knowledge of history reside? It's in my mind. I assimilate it, internalize it. So then I know, I've studied history, I can say. So it is knowledge gained by the mind with the help of the sense organs. How about knowledge of astronomy? What kind of knowledge is that? It is also indirect knowledge. Now, if you study celestial bodies, sun, moon, nearest to us, sun is not nearest to us, other planets are in solar system are near moon and Mercury and Venus and Mars and Jupiter, Neptune or Saturn, all those things. Pluto is downgraded now, it's not a planet it's an asteroid. So all of that knowledge is also the same type of knowledge as history. Because you read about it. You see the pictures. You see the pictures transmitted by the X-ray, the Hubble telescope and all those telescopes, the close-up pictures and everything. All that knowledge is the same type of secondary knowledge. Now we go to passage number 4. Passage number 5 on page 3. Right? Did you locate that one?
Page 3.
Page page 3, passage number 5. Shaunaka, the great householder, approached Angiras. Angiras was the name of a great Vedic Rishi, in the proper manner. In the proper manner means there is a certain prescribed way in which to approach a teacher. It's not given in this Upanishad, but in other places it is given. How to approach, in say Upanishad it is given elsewhere, not in this passage. How to approach a teacher is a way. You cannot simply walk into a teacher's house and say, sir, please start teach me astronomy or history. You cannot say that. There is a proper way. Lot of preparation has to be done on the part of the seeker, student. And the teacher must also satisfy certain qualifications. Then in the proper prescribed manner, you have to approach the teacher and seek knowledge. All that is given in the Upanishads and other scriptures. You might get to some of those. So in the proper manner, asked, who was Shaunaka's Angiras, another great saint. Revered sir, what is that by knowing which all this becomes known? That is the main question. If I know history, I know only history, I don't know geography. If I know geography, then I know only geography, I don't know astronomy. If I know astronomy, I don't know zoology. If I study all my life, if I study physics, I don't know zoology or botany. So this is fragmentary knowledge is what we have. At best what we can do in our lifetime, we can dedicate all our 50-60 years of active study to acquire knowledge in one fragment. But that is does not give us totality of knowledge. We know more and more about less and less when you do PhD and postgraduate work, right? An expert is one who knows more and more about less and less. But what about all the other vast areas of knowledge? If I am an expert in history, then I don't know anything about algebra or mathematics or chemistry or dentistry. So I remain ignorant of the vast other portions of knowledge. That is not true knowledge. The Vedic Rishis, Vedic students were not satisfied with that kind of fragmentary knowledge. They wanted key to the totality of knowledge. So the question was, Kasmin Bhagavat Bhagava Vijnyate Sarvamidam Vijnyatam Bhavati. That's the original passage. I didn't give the original passage. I had half a mind to print the Sanskrit. I'd done it for other Upanishads. But then the matter would be too much and many people cannot read Sanskrit. Nagari Lipi, so I just let the English remain. But for when we did retreat for other Upanishads, I have put the Sanskrit also there. So here the Sanskrit portion question is Kasminna Bhagava Vijnate Sarvamidam Vijnatam Bhavati. Shaunaka's question to Angiras was, sir, what is that knowledge by knowing which everything will become known? Not satisfied with fragmentary knowledge. I want the sum total of knowledge. What is that knowledge? By knowing which everything will become known. If I know physics, only physics will become known. Other branches of knowledge will not become known to me. That is not satisfactory to me. I want to gain that knowledge which gives total knowledge. What is the key to all storehouse of knowledge? To him, Angiras said, two kinds of knowledge must be known, dve vidye veditavye. Two kinds of knowledge have to be known. Iti hasma yad brahma vidha vadanti. Know yourself Brahman. Say, two kinds of knowledge must be known. There are two kinds of knowledge. They are the higher knowledge, transcendental knowledge or paravidya, and the lower knowledge, objective knowledge or aparavidya. Vevidye veditavye parachaiva aparacha. Paravidya, aparavidya. These are terms to be noted. If you take all vidya, can be classified according to this passage into para, Upara, long A. Upara. This para is not para, the English paramilitary, paralegal, paramedical means half, partial. Paralegal means not fully qualified lawyer, but enough knowledge of law is there to work in a law office, to do legal research. Paramedical means not fully an MD degree, but enough medical knowledge is there to treat patient, give first aid, etc. Not that this para means supreme, supreme. Not partial. Supreme knowledge. All encompassing knowledge. This is the kind of knowledge Shaunaka was asking Angiras. By knowing which everything becomes known. Is chemistry supreme knowledge for Avita? If you study chemistry all your life, you know only chemistry. You don't know mathematics or zoology. So that is partial knowledge, that's aparavidya. But Shaunaka, the Vedic students are not interested in that. We want to know some totality of all knowledge. What is that? By knowing which, everything will become known. Kasmin bhagavo vijnate sarvamidam vijnatam bhavati. That was the question. Aparavidya means partial or physical or material kind of knowledge, ordinary knowledge, supreme knowledge, knowledge of the self. This is Atma Jnana. If you know the self, then everything becomes known. Self-knowledge is supreme or paravidya. Knowledge of the world. Knowledge of the world. This is not useless. We have to study this one. Vedic rishis did not downplay the importance of this. See, this passage says here, passage number 5 says, two kinds of knowledge must be known. In the second paragraph, how it becomes, they did not say only this has to be studied, this should not be studied, they didn't say that. Both are important. Two kinds of knowledge must be known, as Nuvasa Brahman said, Vedvidye, Veditavye. They are the higher knowledge. This is paravidya and the lower knowledge. Higher and lower can be misleading terms. There is nothing higher, no. This is all-encompassing total knowledge. This is knowledge of the world. Another difference is, this is not gained by the mind. This is gained by the mind. If I have a sharp mind, I can master all the aparavidyas, algebra, mathematics, quantum mechanics and physics and philosophy and history and geography and botany, everything. If I have a sharp, receptive mind, I can master them. But this one is not that kind of mental knowledge. This is experience. You see the difference? This is knowledge through the mind. What happens, aparavidya, when the mind loses its sharpness, then we forget. If I have dedicated 50 years of my life for study of chemistry and I am working as a chemistry research scientist at the cutting edge of chemistry, then I know chemistry very well. At least some branch of chemistry I know very well. Then at one time what happens, I am 65 or 70 years old, I retire from my job and very rapidly my chemistry knowledge fades away because I am not using it every day and it becomes faded with age, everybody's. You forget things. So all my knowledge of chemistry slowly fades away. It's not permanent. depends on the acuity of the mind. That is the nature of aparavidya. Paravidya is not like that. It is experience. It will never be lost. Experience. Experience once gained is permanent. Not mental experience. It is transcendental, real experience, deeper experience. You experience your own divine nature that you cannot lose. You have to know it by only experience. You can't know it by thinking about it or speaking about it. This is beyond the domain of speech. I can't describe that kind of experience in words. It has to be known, just like taste of mango ice cream. How can I describe in words taste of mango or mango ice cream? How to know it? By experience. There's no use giving a lecture about mango taste. It's useless to give that kind of lecture. What is the best way to know, to tell you about mango? I can tell you where to go, some Indian grocery store, and then buy mango, cut it, eat. No, then no words are necessary. Beyond the domain of words, cannot be conveyed by words. So don't ask me what is paravidya, because there are no words to explain it. How to know? Experience. Yes.
Maharaj, I want to ask you, if you just neglect, paravidya, and just try to just go first, just to focus on the paravidya, is that also okay?
For some people it has to happen like that. For Latu Maharaj, Sri Swami Adbhutananda, Sri Ramakrishna's disciple, he didn't have any aparavidya at all. Sri Ramakrishna tried to teach him alphabet. After struggling for several days, this young man, Latu, could not even understand or memorize the first four or five letters of the alphabet. He didn't learn. After struggling for a long time, Sri Ramakrishna gave up. He said, this is hopeless, this is not for you, don't worry, just do what I say. So he gave him instructions on meditation that he reached paravidya. He didn't even know the alphabet. He remained illiterate all his life. But that is an exception. Generally, dvayavidya vedita vedi passage, you have to know. Because human life has two aspects. Human life has two aspects. One aspect is, now I found something to write. One aspect is abhyudaya. For abhyudaya, you need aparavidya. What is abhyudaya? Means worldly well-being or progress. See, most of us at our level, we need to have certain basic things for reasonable life. We have to have a place to stay, we have to have some clothes to wear, we have to have some money to buy food, etc. And we have to have reasonable health care, we have to have mode of transportation. Without these things, life becomes a little bit difficult. All of these things that we need for daily life, only how do we gain? We need aparavidya, for you have to study some branch of knowledge, social sciences or humanities or English literature or some science or engineering, something, computer science, something you have to study to get a job so you can get the worldly needs. Otherwise life becomes difficult. Latu Maharaj didn't have any of that. He didn't have to go for a job. Whatever food came unsolicited, he was satisfied. We can't live like that. If you can live, then we don't need aparavidya, but generally we need. So that is abhyudaya. For that we need aparavidya. That's why Upanishad says, veditavye aparavidya. Needed. Okay. That's one part. What is B? That is not enough. If I need a grand life, lot of money, and some kind of knowledge in some field, aparavidya field, science or some social science or something, literature, humanities, like that. Lead a decent life, well-being, everything, good health care, everything. But that is also not satisfactory. We need to have this one. You feel the need for self-knowledge. That is called nishreyasa. I am trying to introduce a word here. There is a visarga. Shreya, I'll write English also. Nishreyasa. Spiritual knowledge or experience. Both are necessary for most people. For exceptional people, this may not, this they can bypass this. A lot of us, I don't have to go to a job, work in an office or a firm, or make a living salary, I don't care. But can we generally say like that one? We need to lead a decent life. So we need both kinds of knowledge. So what I am trying to say is, the Vedic Rishis harmonize these two and emphasize the importance of both. Devidya, Veditavya. There was no discussion, science is superior, religion is no good, or spirituality is superior, science is no good. That kind of conflict rift was there in other societies, but not in the Vedic society. They saw the harmony between the two. So we go back to the passage. Devidya, Veditavya, Para, Chaiva, Para. Of these two, Tatra, Para, the knowledge, objective knowledge is Rigveda, Yajurveda, Samaveda, Atharvaveda, phonetics, rituals, grammar, etymology, Shikshura, Palpa, Vyakarana, Nirukta, metrics, Chandas, astrology, Jyotisham. The transcendental knowledge is that by which the imperishable Brahman is attained. The distinction between the two kinds. All disciplines of knowledge we study in the academic professional fields, including humanities, social sciences, sciences and technology, they are all called aparavidya. They are studied with the help of the sharp intellect, mind, sense organs. Sense organs are assisted, augmented by external instruments such as the telescope and the microscope and the computer. But this one has to be experienced. That you can read in books. Listen to somebody who knows more from us, lectures. This you have to do that, plus you have to gain experience. Experience is the keyword, anubhava.
The words pravritti and nivritti, are those analogous to abhidha and
sriddhi? A little bit different. Not,
okay.
Yeah, not. Pravritti means, yeah, somewhat. Abhyudaya. Engaging in worldly life. Nivritti means renunciation. Worldly life.
You just mentioned that word anubhava. What does that mean?
Experience.
Anubhava means experience.
Experience.
Maharaj?
With
the study of aparavidya, you can never become that knowledge. Unlike with para.
No.
Vidya,
it remains mental knowledge.
Yeah, it just is outside you.
I can be lost also.
Yeah.
But yes, you become that, we'll study another passage. You become that, then you cannot lose that. And you are all not becoming. You are that, it only remains you, gives you that experience. If you are not that now, if I become that, then it is something acquired, anew. That is not intrinsic, that is not good. Upanishad says, you are that, tatvamsi. But simply I don't know that one. So my ignorance has to be removed, that's Upanishad. Upanishad is that knowledge which removes the ignorance of my self-knowledge which is already there. I experience it. I don't become that at that moment, I don't become divine. I am that divine now, even now. But only I am not aware of my divinity. Upanishad helps me to become aware of my divinity, experience my divinity.
So where is the guidance for to attain para-knowledge?
Upanishad.
What?
All the scriptures. rishis, not teachers there.
But that's also not experience, right? You are eating it. Until you experience.
Experience is the key. That's the culmination of that knowledge. You have to go? No, because it's already 8 o'clock. At this rate, I finished not finished even one passage. We need 44 hours of retreat. We only have 5 hours. What to do? We'll do our best, yes.
But Maharaj, for that experience of that knowledge, you do need to have a guru to put you on that path.
Yes,
right?
Yes. We need then guru for both.
But you can't just do it on your own.
Rarely some people have done it on their own. Like Ramana Maharshi didn't have a guru. But that is only exception. Generally we need it.
So most of us should seek a guru.
So it says the need for a guru is explained. That passage comes here also, but I'll give a side reference since you asked. BG. That's your Mool Grantha. Anybody has Gita book with you?
Yes.
Can you please give it to me?
Never.
I want to verify whether I am giving the correct number or not.
Bangla.
I'll check what is 34. 434.
Chapter 4.
Yes. See, just tell me the beginning. Then I know whether I am giving the right reference or wrong reference.
434.
So the importance of Guru is here. Guru is to be is needed. Again, Guru is also needed for this. See, even to take an online course where you don't have a classroom. You don't go to a classroom, you don't know who the teacher, only you get the lessons online and you do the assignments online and you get the grade online. A guru must be there, somebody at the other end. Right. Somebody created the program, instruction program, and who evaluates your answers and gives you the grade. So that guru is there. You may not be in person. Guru is there. Okay, now anything else about this passage? Let us read before the last paragraph. By means of the transcendental knowledge, the wise behold everywhere Brahman, which otherwise cannot be seen or seized, which has no attributes, no eyes, no ears, no hands or feet, which is eternal and omnipresent, all-pervading and extremely subtle, which is imperishable and source of all beings. So this original Mundaka Upanishad, this is Mundaka Upanishad, chapter 1. Section 1, verses 3 to 6, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yatyadagresh adreshyam agrahyam agotram avarnam achakshuhu shrotram tadapanipadam nityam vibhum sarvagatam susukshmam tadavyayam yadbhutayonim paripashyanti dhira. That is the passage. If you have the book, you can read that one. Shall we stop here or what shall we do? It's 8:10.
Yes, we can open up for questions.
Okay.
Swamiji. You said is it appropriate to say that you need a guru for apara knowledge, because guru is one who gives you self knowledge. You need a teacher. Is it appropriate? Is it
guru? We need guru for both kinds of knowledge, but different kinds of guru.
Okay.
A guru who can give this may not be able to give this. Or a guru who can give this may not be able to give this. They must have the proper
background.
If you go to a chemistry teacher, I can only teach you chemistry, you cannot teach you zoology.
Because the modern, the contemporary thinking is that, you know, everybody, guru, the word guru is very used loosely these days, that people would just say, you know, if somebody is good at a subject matter, they just say guru. But in our shop, it's meant to be used for someone who gives you self-knowledge.
That is in 434 Gita. Who is a guru?
Yes.
You studied that in the fourth chapter, right?
Yes.
No.
You said there is a proper way to approach a guru. It's mentioned in some commercials. Do you have a reference for
that? Actually, that 434 gives the proper way. Bhagavad Gita. Three things you have to do when you go to a guru. That sloka says, Tad Vidhi, know that. Tad means that knowledge, Brahman. By doing three things. The guru must be Tattva Darshan, Brahmajnana. He must know it. If he doesn't know, he cannot teach me. So that's guru's requirement. Other requirements are given in other books. On my part, the seeker, I must do three things when I approach a guru. Pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. Pranipata means? Sashtang pranam. What does sashtang pranam indicate? Humility, surrender. If I go with a big ego, let me see how much this man knows, what can he teach me, then that teaching learning doesn't happen. Humility must be there. Pranipata. Pariprasna means seeking the truth, knowledge of the truth. Pariprasna means not asking questions to show off how much. Some people in some, not in Iowa, other places, they say, I want to ask a question. Then when I say yes, they'll start giving a discourse. They will quote this scripture, that scripture. Their purpose is to tell other people in the class how much they have studied. That's not Pariprasna means a sincere, humble inquiry into the nature of reality. Sir, please enlighten me on this, like this. Pranipatena, Pariprasnena, third thing we have to do is sevaya, we have to do service. These three things is the three things we have to do when we approach a guru. The guru must be Brahmajnani, Tattvajnani. Upadekshanti te jnanam, jnaninas tattvadarshinaha. That's that Gita passage. Incidentally, study of Gita is a prerequisite for study of Upanishad. So when we talked about the topic, Tirthankar, we said we are studying Gita chapters. Eight chapters to be studied. So I thought this Ayava group is ideally qualified to study Upanishad because they know the Gita. Gita study is a prerequisite to study Upanishads. In the Gita Dhyana Shlokam, one of the shlokas says, Sarvo Upanishado Gavo Dogdha Gopala Nandanaha Partho Vatsa Sudhir Bhokta Dugdham Gita Amritam Mahati. Sarvo Upanishado Gavo. All the Upanishads are the cow. Dogdha Gopala Nandana. The cow, the milkman is Gopala, the Lord Krishna himself. Partho Vatsaha, Arjuna is the calf, to the beneficiary. Sudhir Bhokta, all intelligent people, they are the beneficiaries. If the milk is extracted, if the cow is milked, not only the calf, other people who drink milk also get the benefit. Dugdham Gita Amritam. Dugdham means the milk. Gita Amrita is the milk, which is the distilled, condensed knowledge enshrined in the Upanishads. So if you study Gita, you get the essence of Upanishads. Then you can study the details in the Upanishads. The main points in the Upanishads are given in the Gita. Then if you are not satisfied with the Gita study, you want to get more knowledge, then you go to the Upanishad, the second level. Now let us do one more passage.
Okay.
Passage number 6 on page 3. This is a very interesting story in the Chandogya Upanishad, but we will condense it. Passage number 6. Narada approached Sanat Kumara and asked, Sir, please teach me. Adi Bhagavo. This is the introduction to the... This comes in the 7th chapter of Chandogya Upanishad. Very nice old chapter. Is the conversation between Narada, a great sage, and Sanat Kumara, a great sage. Narada himself was a student, Narada Maharaj as a student. What was Narada's problem? He explains. Sanat Kumara said, tell me what you know, then I shall teach you further. So this is the hallmark of a good teacher. The teacher must first of all ascertain the level of the student, because at what level the teaching should happen. If the student doesn't have the proper background and the teacher does not know, he assumes the teacher assumes the student knows many things which he may or may not know. So that's why you have to have prerequisite courses. If you want to take calculus, you must take pre-calculus, algebra, high school math, all those things. Then only you are ready to do calculus. So Sanat Kumara asked him, tell me what you know, then I shall teach you further. Narada said, so look at Narada's reply. Narada was a master of all the aparavidya. Sir, I know all of these, Rigveda, Yajurveda, Samaveda, the fourth Atharvaveda, fifth Veda, namely history and the Puranas, the science of offerings to the ancestors, mathematics, science of omens, the science of treasures hidden underground, logic, ethics, astrology, Vedic knowledge, physical science, the science of elements of geology, archery, astronomy, herpetology, snake charming, and fine arts. That means everything, all the aparavidya he had mastered. Who? Narada. But why is he seeking more knowledge? Now we say the reason why Narada, though he knew all these things, why did he go to Sanat Kumara and ask for teaching? Narada explains his problem. I know only the text. Mantra Videva Asmi. I do not know the self. Na Atmavit. Atmagyan I don't have. Textual knowledge I have. All these books I have studied and mastered, I can repeat backwards and forwards. But I don't have self-knowledge, I have no peace of mind. And he says, I have heard from great ones like you that only the knower of the self transcends grief. Tarati shokam atmavit iti bhagavad drishebhyaha srutam. That is the passage. From people, great people like you, Narada says to Sanat Kumara, from great people like you I have heard that only knower of the self transcends grief. Knower of aparavidya does not transcend grief. He can lead a comfortable life, he can make money, he can get fame, he can buy a big house and car and everything, but he cannot have peace of mind. Peace of mind, not ordinary peace, deep, unshakable peace, comes only from paravidya, not from aparavidya. A person may be a highly qualified aparavidya specialist, Nobel Prize winner and everything, but he may be not peaceful within. It's possible. But paravidya guarantees peace. Not what kind of peace? Yam labdva, slaka number 6, chapter 22, you see, verify. Yam labdva cha param labham manyate nadhikam tataha yasmin stito nadukhena gurunapi vichalyate. Benefit of paravidya, I am explaining. In 6th chapter, Sri Krishna says, by knowing which, yam labdva, by gaining which, tato adhikam labham navidyate. 22?
Yes.
6th chapter 22, make a note of that. What kind of peace will paravidya grant? Narada says, I know all this vidya, but I have no peace of mind. From great people like you, I have heard that only knowers of Atman have peace of mind, transcend grief. So what kind of peace is that? Sri Krishna explains that in the 22nd verse in 6th chapter. For knowing which there is nothing higher to be known, yasmin stito, by being established in that knowledge, by establishing in this paravidya, gurunapi dukkhena na vichalyate. Even by the greatest of calamities, a person remains unshaken. No matter what happens, that person remains absolutely calm and peaceful. His peace is not conditional. Our peace is conditional. If my health is good, I am happy. If I have some health problem, I am happy. If I have money, I am happy. If I don't have money, I am not happy. That is conditional peace. That's no good. Because conditions change. I may be healthy today, tomorrow I become sick. I may have money today, tomorrow I may lose everything in stock market. That is not guaranteed peace. But this peace that paravidya gives is unconditional. Once you are established in it, Nothing can shake it. You can never lose it. This you can lose. Aparavidya thing you can lose. It's limited. Supposing somebody has deposited $100,000 or $1 million in a bank. Earned. Not black money, white money. Not in Swiss bank, in American bank. $1 million a person has deposited, hard earned money. And in the course of time, the person becomes old and dies. Next day, next birth, he is born again. Then he cannot go to the bank. Last time I deposited $1 million, I want to withdraw $100 from that one. They said, no, no, you are not deposited any money, you have to deposit in this life. Same thing about aparavidya. Supposing somebody does PhD, no, somebody does master's degree in, biology. And then that person works as a scientist and teacher and dies. Next time, when he is born, he has to start from ABCD 1, 2, 3, 4, kindergarten. He cannot start, go to PhD because last time I did MS, this time give me admission for PhD. No, that won't work. Aparavidya is only for this life. Whereas paravidya transcends, it's timeless. Once you get it, permanent. Whether the body lives or dies is immediate. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire. 220 Gita. That is the Narada seeking that knowledge. He had all the aparavidya. But he wanted to know paravidya. That's why Narada goes to Sanat Kumara. So the last two lines on page 3. Sir, I know only the text. Mantra videva asmi. I do not know the self. Na atmavit. I have heard from great ones like you, Bhagavad Rishyabhyaha Srutam, that only the knower of the self transcends grief. Tarati shokam atmavit iti. Permanent freedom from grief and peace that is unconditional and eternal. Unconditional eternal. Such a peace is granted by paravidya. Aparavidya can give temporary benefit, good for this life only. I am suffering from grief. Sir, please take me across the ocean of sorrow. Shokasya param tarayatu. Narada's request. To whom? To Sanat Kumara. Sanat Kumara then proceeds to teach self-knowledge to Narada step by step and continues. That which is in, this is a very important passage described in the two paragraphs, Chandogya Upanishad chapter 7. Very important passage, be very beautiful to chant also. Sanat Kumara then proceeds to teach self-knowledge to Narada step by step and continues, that which is infinite, that alone is happiness, bliss. Yo vai bhuma tat sukham. Bhuman means infinity. Anything finite is not going to give us lasting peace. Give some peace, temporary peace. Infinity only can alone give us lasting peace, unshakable, unconditional peace, only with infinite knowledge. That which is infinite, that alone is happiness, bliss. There is no happiness in the finite. Na alpe sukham asti. Alpa means finite, limited. It may be large, but limited. Later on, when we get to it, we will see Kathopanishad, Nachiketas. Same problem as Narada had. Yama offers him all kinds of things. Large kingdom, lot of money, queens and treasury and music and dance and chariots and horses. This little boy Nachiketa refuses, I don't want all these things. They come and go. What good are they? I want knowledge of the self. I want paravidya. Nachiketa stood firm, steadfast. Then his request was paravidya. So Narada says, does the same thing. And Sanat Kumara says, that which there is no happiness in the finite. Limited, there is no happiness. Alpe, na alpe, sukham asti. The infinite alone is happiness. Bhumaiva sukham. One must inquire into the infinite alone. Bhumatva vijignasitavya iti. The Narada says, Bhumanam bhagava vijnasa. Vijignasa, O Lord, teach me the infinite. Finite he already knew, all the history and everything he knew. astronomy, everything, mathematics. But he didn't know the knowledge of the self. That's it. That is infinite knowledge. Then last paragraph. The infinite is that in which one sees nothing else, hears nothing else, and knows nothing else, sees something else, hears something else, and knows something else. That is finite. That which is finite is mortal. Tadalpam athayadalpam tanmartyam sabhagavah kasmin pratishthita iti. Narada pursues the question. What is it established? Is paravidya sve mahimni yadivano mahimni iti. Sanatumara abadati. Sanatumara said it is established in its own self. It is not based upon something else. Knowledge of history is based upon events in the world. There is a dispute. Some people say audience came to India from outside. Some people say the audience are already there in India. So how to determine? Happened thousands of years ago. Opinions and speaks the loudest voice. So they can alter textbook history. History textbooks have been rewritten many times. So that is not certain knowledge. But knowledge of self is not like that. Is infinite, eternal, in the form of experience, then your work is done. Our work as human beings is not done. No aparavidya we study, how much wealth we acquire. Our work is done only when we get paravidya in the form of direct experience. That Upanishad grants that vidya. That is why we are studying Upanishad. Questions before we close? Closing prayer? Let's say closing prayer.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kaschid Dukha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om. Happy. May all be peaceful. May all realize what is auspicious. May no one be subject to misery. Peace. May there be peace and joy in our hearts. May there be peace and harmony amongst all beings. And may there be peace everywhere in nature. Hari Om Tat Sat Sarvam Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.